Who's going to lead our meeting today?
Okay, here we go. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the community engagement meeting for May 7th here online. And we can start with some introductions. Stephen?
Stephen, the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Hi, Stephen. I'm Richard. I'm co-chair, council co-chair, and community engagement co-chair. Kira?
Kira, council staff.
Thank you, Kira. Lee?
Lee, council member.
Hi, Lee. Derek?
Hi, I'm Derek Mapp, council member.
And hi, Derek. Kat?
Kat Kochkir, council staff.
Okay, welcome everyone. Let's put up a review for today's agenda if we could. And as Kira mentioned, this looks pretty straightforward. Anyone see anything they'd like to add or amend? Okay, seeing none, prove that by consensus. How about last month's minutes? Anyone have anything on that? Okay. And of course, earlier Franco sent out an email. He gave us a courtesy heads up that he wouldn't be able to attend today's meeting. He had some work things come up. So we appreciate that from Franco. Are there any announcements? No announcements. I don't believe there's any public comment. Stephen, without further ado, HCAP report.
Thank you. So per the usual, I will highlight a couple of cases. I noticed, so on this report, the reasons the report is duplicative sometimes, just so I might add, is it used to be very clear and easy for me to delineate the cases that were open versus closed. For some reason, when we upgraded to Salesforce, we lost some functionality, gained some functionality. One of the things that I lost was the ability to delineate in any reasonable fashion what was open, ongoing, and what's closed. And so I just want to know why there are some issues that remain on here that aren't necessarily notated. But I did see in the minutes from the last meeting that I noted some of these successes the last time. So what I'll do is I'll just highlight a couple of the cases that I wanted to highlight this week. First, I wanted to, honestly, it's really one issue, but that kind of appears twice in the report. If you look at page one, the very first case, 2025-10. And then I will also ask you to kind of simultaneously keep in mind on page two, 2025-27. These are very similar issues. And in fact, I've had a third issue pop up just this week or last week. Folks are having a really challenging time accessing substance use services right now, despite the efforts by the current mayoral administration. This is a client who was a former resident of a residential substance use facility. There were some changes made following some oversight to the procedures where they could enter the building, including they were not allowed to bring in outside food or beverage, and they were conducting what the residents apparently began calling a TSA search when they entered. This client in particular was diabetic, and the food that they were serving really didn't suit the client's needs. They were used to bringing in sugar-free snacks and sugar-free drinks for themselves because all that they had available were things that they could not safely eat with their health condition. And the client wanted to kind of raise those concerns even though they were exiting the facility. So they drafted a grievance and tried to contact the client to, you know, confirm that it was an accurate reflection of, you know, his thoughts and his account of events. And it became very difficult to reach him. And it turns out when I spoke when I finally did get in touch with him, he was in a rough place. He had relapsed and he was trying to get into detox services. And he had been trying for weeks. He'd been connecting with basically every service provider I would try to connect him with, utilizing case management services. And he would get these referrals that would basically fall flat. He'd self-present somewhere and they'd tell him he wasn't ill enough. He'd self-present somewhere else. They'd tell him to come back the next day. It was kind of this endless wheel. And I have unfortunately lost contact with the client ever since my efforts to try and get him into some sort of facility. Since then, I've had at least one other client indicate exactly the same thing. It's not on this report, but it will be, I think, on the next report. And then again, you'll see on page two that the case that I asked you to keep in mind, a very similar issue, which is a client that was told to go to the Behavioral Health Access Center. At that point, encountered barriers that were preventing him from accessing services. And I think at that point, the kind of provider relationship and his faith in the system and his ability to get help kind of fell off. And he was just like, I'll figure it out. I can't handle this right now. And, but he did say, I think it's important for, people to know that, like, issues that appear on, in this instance, the barrier that he encountered was there was a note on his account that indicated some previous interaction he had with a service provider. And he said that he was being treated differently at that point. And so he wanted the community to know that, providers need to be aware that what they write, whether it's right or wrong, does have a long-lasting effect. It sticks on people's medical records and it's viewable to everybody. That may be a safety concern for service providers, but it also can become a barrier for our consumers who are trying to do better the next time. The analogy that I'll use is one that maybe not everybody gets, but I had a law professor who grew up on a farm who would talk about dogs on the farm who would kill a chicken. And if they kill a chicken once, then they become known as chicken killers. And it's very hard to overcome that reputation of being a chicken killer. And so, I think it's very important for service providers to remember that, just because, you act a certain way one time does not mean you're gonna act the same way the next time you present or the next day. Or even with a different service provider. And so although the client didn't want to file a grievance, I did offer to share it on this report so that the community would be aware of that and at least advocate for him in that limited fashion. So those are the kind of main ones that I wanted to talk about. I will obviously make myself available for any questions or follow up that you all have.
Thank you, Stephen. Anything for Stephen? Stephen, is it... ethical, are you able to tell us this first program, like with this building entry policy and dietary, the residential subject, is it, can you name the program?
I'm not able to. Okay. Yeah, we the DPH, as you might know, DPH gets a report very similar to this, except it does name the service providers. So if I need to follow up, I will, I will. In this instance, though, the rupture that occurred was not something, the client successfully graduated from the program and did move on and moved into their own home. And that's where they kind of relapsed, right? It didn't happen in the program as a result of this. This, although the issue presents here as my initial kind of consultation with the client and my initial representation of the client, the representation morphed when I tried to reach out and say, hey, are we going to file that grievance? And basically the response was, I actually kind of need that service provider right now. And I'm, although I know they're not able to retaliate against me, I don't need to be inviting that into my life right now. I really just need to get back into services, but I need to go to detox first. And unfortunately, as of a year or so ago, there are very few detox facilities that can provide medically assisted detox, and they have very few beds, and they are unreliably available. So that is not the issue that's captured here. It's the issue in the subtext that exists because I have not been able to get back in touch with the client.
So that's in about detox. Now, are these, back in the day, I could walk into a detox in San Francisco. I used to go there just to get out of the rat race, like Ozanam Center. I mean, very low barrier to getting a mat on the floor. So what are these, Suboxone type MADs?
Yeah, so I know at least one provider, I won't name the service provider, but I know at least one service provider that had detox facilities shut that facility down about a year ago. That was more or less, you know, I don't know when you were accessing those services. I know a little bit about your history just from what you've shared here. I know you celebrated, you know, 5 years this year, but, you know,
seven
in the last 2 years, what's that?
Nothing, seven.
Oh, seven. I'm so sorry.
No, this was a long time ago, Stephen. Like it was kind of a wild west, but you could 110, 120 guys could get mats on the floor. You could detox for 2 or 3 days. You know, then they might get you out to Harbor Lights or something. I know the system's changed, but that's something that I don't want to go on a tangent here about this new mayor, but these law and order and clean up the blocks, and I got a new method. Actually, I see more people suffering.
Yeah, it's hard for me to, you know, I think it's important to keep in context here. There are providers that are outside the HIV Health Services Network, right, that don't receive funding from HHS that provide some of these services. I am less familiar with those. I mean, I know of them, but I am less familiar with their systems and their array of services. Some of them may have detox services, but my understanding right now is that there's really only one service provider within the HIV Health Services Network that can provide detox services. You have to self-present there very early in the morning. They may or may not have a bed. They may tell you to come back the next day, which for somebody who's struggling with addiction may not happen. And then the only other option is to present to the Behavioral Health Access Center, which, you know, if you then encounter a barrier like what this client, with the second client encountered, presents a whole new challenge, right? It can begin to feel like a really insurmountable barrier. I think the pop-up clinic has been very helpful, is what my understanding, because they do have drop-in psych services at General Hospital. And I think they can immediately connect. But it's kind of, things are in a rough place right now. A lot of service providers weren't able to maintain those services.
Thanks, Stephen.
You know, I have to say, as someone who, as a service provider, trying to support folks in this effort, it's a little bit frustrating on my end because it falls back on me. Like my folks look at me and kind of go like, I thought this was going to be easy. And I kind of go, yeah, I was told that it was going to be easy. Like, this is not easy. Some of the things that you had just said, Stephen. And it's hard for me to want to, I don't make promises, but I it's hard for me to navigate the system myself, particularly when it changes so quickly. And particularly if it's not with providers that don't receive Ryan White funds in terms of having some teeth in the game. And so I keep on thinking, though, that even for those sets of folks, there has to be some sort of grievance process and some sort of some way of getting them to respond. Do you know if places like the Human Rights Commission would be an appropriate place to follow up on a complaint or a grievance? What would you suggest?
So the Human Rights Commission does, well, so your question is, has a few different parts. The first is there a grievance process that for to be followed? The second is there further escalation, such as to an organization like HRC? The answer to both of those questions is yes, in some instances. There is a grievance process, but as we know, and as you've heard on many of the, in many of these meetings, the grievance process is not necessarily a resolution. It's an opportunity to voice the client's concerns and hopefully for the service providers to improve their services. But if the funding for the resource that they need is not there, and the grievance is, I need that resource, the service provider cannot magically fix that problem. They can empathize and they can say, we're sorry, we wish we could have done better, but in the end, if they can't, a grievance process is not going to find funding for somebody or for a provider to be able to open a facility, right? To escalate it to HRC, there are ways to do that. In general, the Human Rights Commission investigates discrimination-related complaints. So it would have to be, there would have to be, and I have done this in instances where I've helped clients first file a reasonable accommodation. Once that reasonable accommodation, and my records have to be tight there too, right? Because if the reasonable accommodation was not requested in the proper manner and the proper procedure wasn't followed, then the Human Rights Commission will come back to me and say, well, the reasonable accommodation process really wasn't started. So when I do that, I have to be very, very clear. I have to be, with my language. It needs to be a little bit more firm than how I normally act. It needs to very clearly communicate that the client is requesting a reasonable accommodation of this sort, and it needs to be supported by appropriate documentation and backup from healthcare providers or somebody familiar with their disability. HRC then can do that. Pick that up. If the agency receives city funding, they can certainly follow through on that. The problem is HRC does not have any enforcement power. The Human Rights Commission is charged with basically sending letters of concern, which then a client could take and use to find, take some private action against it, right? Because then they have some evidence, right? The Human Rights Commission's findings after their investigation would act as evidence. And so I have had clients move through that process. I have yet to have a client who has been able to effectively complete it. It's a lengthy process, it's a multi-step process, and when really all you're trying to do is get help, it's a heavy lift, for somebody that's disabled. And once it's on the Human Rights Commission's plate, it's kind of off of mine and out of my hands. There's very little I can do at that point. So it's not that there's no recourse, it's just that does the recourse effectuate what it is that we're trying to accomplish? And the only way to really accomplish what it is we need is to have facilities funded to provide the services that are needed.
One of the things that I think about, I understand what you're saying, and I 1000% agree. Most folks that are struggling aren't struggling for 3 months or a year down the road. They're struggling for today, and these sort of processes are just an additional stress that they can ill afford. But it's something to be said for raising how it helps raise awareness. And even for the grievance procedure, I think of it less often, particularly these days, as a way of getting a client to, like, oh, this is my side of the story and it needs to be heard and dealt with. Then I think of it as a way, much like what you do in terms of if the agency is smart, they're tracking the grievance procedures that are being presented to them and looking at policy changes or service changes or arrangements that can be made to minimize what are their most common grievance to them are about. I think
Most
it's
certainly.
also I think particularly for the work that you do, when I view your documentation, and you give a wonderful in service around, like, these are the top concerns for the folks that are HIV positive in our city. I look forward to those presentations, and I think a number of folks are for exactly those reasons.
I think I'm
But
giving my annual
thank you,
report.
Dr. Stephen.
Yes. I'm giving my annual report. Just a couple of notes just to follow up on what you said. So yes, I'll be giving my annual report at the end of the year or at the end of this month, the Planning Council meeting. I meet with steering, I think, next week. Second, that is always one of my goals with the grievance, is not only to support the client through the process and help them communicate in a, some manageable way what it is that they're experiencing, but it is always my goal to help the service providers understand it as well, because when a client is very agitated about something, it doesn't always come out in the most eloquent way, and it's very difficult for a service provider to understand what where did we fall short, can is this even something that we can fix, or is the client's behavior that's the problem, right? And so it is important to parse that out in a grievance and advocate for the client so that the service provider knows, yes, maybe there is something that can be done, and this is a repeated issue, and it can be, we can improve that. And the service providers at this point, I think, know that's where I'm coming from. One final point, because you did mention, and I know that the Planning Council is comprised of only members of the public and consumers, but also service providers in a large way. And I think it's kind of is relevant what you said about how it falls back on you as a service provider. I feel that as well. And I think that it's maybe relevant to the conversation that ETE is going to be having when they do their summit at the end of the month, because this is one of the things that contributes to burnout. We spin our wheels trying to find services for a client, supporting them in it through every process that is available to us, that is known to us. And in the end, we come up with empty hands because the service in some instances is simply not there. And we have frustrated ourselves, we have frustrated our clients, we have frustrated the system of care, and it makes it very difficult to maintain some level of sanity at times. It certainly contributes to burnout, and it certainly contributes to the attrition that it's that that and you know and retention that our service providers experience. The city really is doing a disservice on to both kind of sides of the challenge here, by not funding these services. They're basically they're wearing me out.
Wait,
Anything else for
Steve,
Stephen, Derek?
insane?
What's up?
Did you just call me insane
Oh, yeah, you?
and
No,
worn out?
Derek. No, me.
Derek, take it easy. I mean, a little psychosis there, and we're getting weird emails from you about order. Come on now. I don't want to do a spot assessment, but things aren't looking good right now. Take it easy.
Thank
All
you.
right. No, anything else for Stephen? Stephen, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. Oh, you're muted, Richard.
Are we going to do needs assessment and COLA updates?
Yeah. So I
Okay.
have no COLA updates. We're still waiting and seeing if people are interested. But so far we have heard nothing. As for our needs assessment though, we did begin outreach, and so far we are seeing participants reaching back out, and we have heard from, I think, one provider, correct, Kat?
Yes, someone from the SF-AIDS Foundation.
And so they're helping spread our flyers as well as referring folks to us, eligible participants, so that way we can start interviewing them. So really exciting. Any questions about that?
Kira, are you guys reaching out to Open House and the communities up here where I live, up Mercy Housing? And there's a lot of folks that fit that criteria.
Yes, I believe Kat did some outreach. Do you want to give a little insight about that, Kat?
So I reached out to Sunny at 55 Laguna and looped in his boss too. And they said that they were going to distribute the flyer and post it on, I think you guys have community boards.
Okay, cool.
I need to get back to you guys about my guys as well.
Oh, okay. Sounds good, Derek.
Is that it, Kira?
Yeah, that was it.
Unless we have anything else, our next meeting will be June 4th. Just on a somber note, you know, we're talking with HIV and housing and things like that, and Stevens reports. And I live in a really clean, quiet building at 55 Laguna. I couldn't be happier. But just, you know, this is an HIV heavy building. We're all in our early 60s or older. There's aging people here. And just in the last 8 days, I noticed the janitors cleaning up the apartment down the end of my hall. And that's not a good sign. And I asked one of my roommates and they said, yeah, she passed. And then this morning I go to do laundry and there's a medical examiner's ticket on my two neighbor down. Guy I talk to all the time. You just never know. You know, some people are abstinent, some people aren't. That it might have something to do with it. Some, you know, we're aging with HIV, but it's a reality of the city and the world we live in. So yeah, that's, you know, it always brings gratitude to me. I feel for them, but you know, just gratitude that I'm still making it because I live in a building like that. And this isn't the TL or something like that, but you know, you see medical examiner vehicles out front, it's never a good sign. But anyway, so Stephen, on that, I really appreciate everything you do for your clients. We're about to have the SF Onboard 2025 Summit. And there's going to be a lot of what you were talking about, Stephen. Attrition, we're mostly directing towards frontline and early career workers. And we're going to have a lot of breakout rooms and OG panels. And Derek is on one of them, the OG panel, the System of Care Services through Experienced Workers' Eyes. So it's going to be a full day. That's May 20th up at the LBGT Center on 1800 Market, 8:45 a.m. to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. All right, everyone. If that's it, good to see everyone. Lee Jewell, you still with us?
I'm still here and look forward to seeing you guys next time.
We love you, Lee. Bye, everyone.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Bye.